This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DiFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 95 of the Muscles Management Podcast. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe. Very, very helpful and greatly appreciated, as always. Starting out with a little tongue twister today. Happy Monday to all of you. I hope you had a great weekend. And I hope if you are, I know we're a lot of us are still working from home, but if you have a commute to work, I hope this is getting you through that. I hope this is getting you through your workday. If you're listening to it while you're taking a break, or you just kind of live life on the edge and listen to it while you're working, I hope, you know, this is a good start to your week. To my athletes out there enjoying their summers, I hope these are enjoyable to you, to kind of get that information in, to help your training, things of that nature. Just in general, I hope you guys are enjoying these and, you know, bringing a little light into your life every Monday and Wednesday. So without further ado, or with that said, let's go over some things before we get started, as always. So before we get into today, doing a Q&A, I wanted to not only give you guys the update on who is coming on the show this week on Wednesday, but also talk about a couple things. So, firstly, if you have not, go back and check out last Wednesday's episode with Matt Shadid, Director of Sports Performance at UMass. He was awesome, and I got a lot of great feedback on that episode. So that's episode 94. Check that out if you haven't yet. And then go also check out episode 93, Meathead Monday, last Monday, how to effectively train speed and strength together, talking about, you know, how I program the hierarchy of the programming attributes and what we do and kind of how we structure those. So be on the lookout for that. This week, very excited, in episode 96. Yep, 96. Having Carlton Salters join us. Carlton making his second appearance on the show, the hitting coach for University of Texas at San Antonio softball. Just a lot of great stuff from him. And what I like about Carlton is his ability to blend the movement and strength training components of things into how he helps his girls get better with, you know, in the box and with their swings. And he's done just some really great stuff over there in terms of how he's transformed some hitters and, you know, makes it simple. Like, I'm not a hitting coach by any means, but I've learned a lot from how simple and applicable he makes these concepts into how he gets the hitters better and how he does it and how he goes about it, the movement that goes into it, the process behind it and things like that. And as I'm talking about this, I am realizing that I owe Carlton an email to give him some feedback on something he shot my way, and I haven't done that yet, so he probably thinks I'm big timing him. Carlton likes to joke around and say, he called me Mr. Big Time. Since I've gotten more followers and things have picked up a bit, he claims it's much harder to get in touch with me unless he reaches out to me at like 10 o'clock at night, which isn't false. I'm not gonna lie. I'm not gonna say he's lying to you or to me. But I try my best. I'm also, if you can't see this right now, I'm recording these episodes, but I've at the current moment only use the recordings for like my posts on certain topics. I think I'm going to make these available on YouTube soon. So that was something I wanted to talk about. I was going through my email or my DMs today for questions for the show. And one of the questions that I had was, are you available on YouTube? I think I'm going to make the Meathead Monday episodes available on YouTube. I'm going to work on making the Wednesday episodes up there as well. The only problem is I have like everything up until mid-September already recorded, and I didn't record the visual or the video on those. So like, it probably wouldn't be till the fall. So I guess let's start with the Meathead Mondays on YouTube and see if you guys like actually seeing me speak, seeing my really beautiful face. I'm just kidding. It's average. If you guys enjoy that, then we'll roll with that. And the reason I brought that up is because I am reliving my late teens, early 20s, college frat boy look with the snapback backwards today. I've been growing my hair out, and I've probably done my hair every morning for the past like 6 weeks. And I hate to sound like it's a big production, but like, I have unruly thick hair, and if I grow it out, I have to like put product in it and comb it back a bit. And I just did not feel like doing that today. It's a Sunday. I was driving back from the Jersey Shore and just had no one to see and no one to look good for. So I threw a hat on, and I am sitting here feeling like I'm 19 again. And, you know, when you guys see the little snippets from the episode on social media this week, you can make fun of me for my backwards hat. All right. With All of that said, one last announcement. Julian has put together a new piece of information or a new ebook for nutrition. It's going to be free. And it's going to have a lot of good info on it. And basically how I'm planning doing this is Wednesday's show, I will give a full rundown of what's involved in it. And I'm going to make it available when it drops on the web, on our website, you know, with a download link, just submit your email so we could send it to you. And that type of deal. And we will get that out. And I think, you know, we've had some success. I've had some success with some of the free things that I've released. And, Julian and I talked and he was like, what do you think? Should I make it free? And I was like, listen, let's like, you know, to keep building your exposure to our audience and the Challenger audience and what we're doing. I want to make it free, to just expose them to more of like what you're able to do and your abilities. So it's going to be free. So you guys are lucking out here. You're getting something very valuable for free. Yeah. So more info on that on Wednesday, and then it'll be releasing next Sunday. So that'll be Sunday the 19th. All right, so let's, without further ado and less rambling from yours truly, let's get into today's episode. I did not mean to make that a 5-minute intro, but unfortunately became a 5-minute intro. My apologies. You guys do have the fast forward button for a reason. So if you want to get right to the questions, just bash that thing and get right up to the good stuff. All right, so we're going to start off with a question from Coach Dunn 5 at Coach Dunn 5. I've gotten a couple questions from him before. Great dude. Good follower. Thank you. All right. What is the most beneficial way to program plyos in terms of ground contact time? Very short ground contact / velocity versus long ground contact / high force output. Is it completely athlete dependent on what they need, or is it better to address one over the other early in the progression, if that makes sense? Thanks, Jerry. Yeah, so good question, Coach. I think the first thing I will say is that the biggest difference, and I never really thought about this, and no one really honestly did. Like, I actually, so Strong by Science, Max Schmarzo, who's been on the show before, really smart guy, as you guys know, I talk about him all the time, but he put a post up talking about depth jumps versus drop jumps. And this is how I remember it. A drop jump being shorter ground contact time. I think most people would just categorize anything, any jump off a surface where you land and then go into another jump as a depth jump. Like, it's just always what we've called them, but it's actually different, in terms of what they do and what they are. A drop jump is less, how should I say, less knee bend, just put quite simply, shorter ground contact time. You're actually trying to maintain the stiffness of your limbs in terms of like conserving momentum, right? So that is a drop jump. I'll explain what the conserving momentum part is in a second, but that's a drop jump. A depth jump, and how I remember it, is depth, like depth meaning just deeper. There's a deeper knee bend, so you're loading into it more. So think almost more of like you jump off a surface and you're landing into your full jump load versus the drop jump, which is going to be much stiffer and have quicker ground contact. Distinct difference between the two of them, and basically how it works is Yuri Verkhoshansky, aka Strength Training Jesus, basically said that every action has a collision, right? So when we sprint or jump, there's a collision, and it's basically with our foot colliding with the ground, which a collision meaning basically coming together of two surfaces with their own unique velocities, right? So their own unique velocities. Not only that, their velocities, the velocities of each surface is changing based on that collision. So think about like when your foot contacts the ground, when you sprint, like the velocity that it was going into that contact with and then what it comes out of it with is going to be different. So that's what kind of categorizes a collision. From there, we have inelastic or elastic collisions. The main difference is one of them is going to conserve energy and momentum. So when you think about conserving energy and momentum, think about that drop jump. When it says conserving momentum, you are minimizing the bend in your knee and the change in your limb and basically keeping the ground contact time shorter, which conserves momentum. And you're also conserving energy because it is building up power through the ground contact. The kinetic energy of the foot and the ground, like that, is going to be building power, right? When you look at a depth jump, it's not so much conserving energy. I'm sorry, not so much conserving momentum. It's taking longer to land. The amortization phase is longer, meaning the time you're spending on the ground, because you're not so much focused on the momentum conservation. You're focused on letting the load be a little longer to make the power output as high as possible, right? You might say, well, why wouldn't I just always want the power output to be as high as possible? The power output could be as high as possible, but if we're not transmitting it efficiently, keep conserving momentum. Think about sprinting. We need to conserve momentum in order to be fast. You want the right or the perfect balance of a lot of power, but a lot of conservation of momentum so that we touch the ground and go right into our next stride. And we're very efficient in terms of the direction we're building. Like when we sprint, we're overcoming inertia, we're overcoming gravity, and we're building up, trying to get our momentum going in one direction. And then we get to top speed and it kind of just takes over. We build it in acceleration and it kind of goes, right? So the more efficient we can be in conserving that momentum in terms of making it really efficient to get to the direction we're trying to get to before ground contact time and after ground contact time, we've been pretty efficient. Like our ground contact time didn't just totally ruin our process of trying to move forward. That is going to be the most effective. That said, there is a time we want to do one or the other when it comes to our jump training. When we are trying to overall build our overall power output, so think about our raw engine, like how much power can we possibly display? The higher that number is, the more we can actually become, like we can be a little stiffer upon ground contact, which would say, okay, like that's going to make less energy come out because we're being a little more focused on the ground contact time. But if our ceiling's higher with our power output, that the floor is going to raise as well. So it's going to make more power be available or be present even when we are being, more cognizant of those shorter ground contact times and more limb stiffness. So we want to improve the overall raw power output of our plyometrics. That's a really good time to let the deeper knee bend occur, because what that's going to do is it's going to forget the whole momentum part of things. Like I don't really care, how long it takes me to get off the ground. I mean, it's a plyo. You're not going to be there for 10 seconds, but like I'm not worried about being super stiff because I want to just focus on increasing my power output as best as possible. When I do that, I can say, okay, let's give myself a little bit higher of a jump off of the ground. Off of the surface to the ground. Why? The higher I am, the more velocity that I have as I go into the collision with the ground, right? The higher my velocity is, the bigger basically exchange or buildup of kinetic energy that occurs from the contact. I allow myself to fully load to go process and go through that entire thing and actually use that kinetic energy into raw power output to make my jump higher. If I try to shorten the amortization phase and preserve momentum, meaning touch the ground and don't let the ground or don't let the collision destroy or diminish the amount of time it's going to take me to go into my next bout, I can't be as powerful or load as much as I would like to. So when it comes to athletes with a lower power output, so maybe athletes that like their vertical is very low when we're trying to improve their raw power, like getting them better at the stretch shortening cycle in a basic sense is going to be a huge bucket to fill, and getting them stronger right away is going to be huge. But if we're having an athlete that like really wants to build that power and they're struggling with it, the full depth jump could be big, because that's going to get them better at, or it's going to enhance the power output of their subsequent jump, which could help their power output overall. When it comes to athletes maybe that have all this power and this raw force, but they struggle in terms of longer ground contact times, if you do a basic test on a jump mat, they have a lot of issues in terms of, let's say they do a four jump test, or if you have a force plate, or you're doing RSI testing, which is basically saying like how much force can we exert in that smaller window to test athletes and how efficient they are at it. So like if their power output goes way down, the lesser the ground contact times are, that means that they struggle with that. And what that means is when they go to sprint, they're not going to be exerting nearly close to what they could possibly exert with those shorter ground contact times. That could be a time where we emphasize that shorter ground contact, shorter amortization phase, and better limb stiffness. With the more advanced athletes that I have built a lot of power with, and we are very powerful, I do like the shorter ground contact times, conserving momentum and making them more efficient in exerting a lot of that power in the shortest amount of time possible, and also conditioning their limbs to handle all of that power in a short amount of time. With athletes, maybe they need to build a little more raw power, then they can go with a longer ground contact time to increase the raw power output of the jump. Additionally, when it comes to the time of the off season or time of the training program, I would say that the longer ground contact time and raw power output is going to be more something maybe you would use in the beginning of a progression or beginning of an off season, just like you would do maybe more strength work into more speed work on the force velocity curve. And the shorter ground contact times are going to be a little further down in the off season or closer to the season as we try to make things as fast as possible and then emphasize the ground contact times being as short as possible. So I hope that helps. That's my explanation on that. All right. Next question. Hey, coach, I'm in the process of talking to programs about playing for them if everything goes well with COVID, and I was wondering if you had any red flags I should look for or questions I should ask when talking about training side of the baseball program. L. Prianito, Logan Prianito. All right, Logan, great question. First thing I will point you to is my episode from, let's see, episode 91 from June 29th, what to look for when trying to find a good strength coach. That's going to be your best place to look for an entire episode on this. But what I will say additionally is to just keep this simple and hit on this a little bit is you really want to look for, and this is a simple question you could ask, ask the coaches what goes into the making their decisions for programming. How are they assessing? Is everything just kind of like, oh, whatever's the sexiest look on social media, or this looks good, this should work for everybody because it's good, everyone's going to do it. Ask them why certain players are doing things differently, why guys are doing things the same. Just pry that way and try to see if there's actually a thought process going into how they program, and if there is an assessment process in terms of power, speed, movement, things like that. Like, try to find out if they're just taking a program and just throwing it at everybody because it's a quote unquote good program, or if they're actually using things to make decisions. That'd be like the easiest way to find out if they actually have some good stuff going on the training side. So pretty quick answer there, but check out the episode that I mentioned. And then also, that's a really good tip, is to ask questions like, why are you guys doing that type of stuff? All right. Next question. This is a good one. I wanted this to be the biggest part of the episode today. What is the true benefit to sprinting in baseball pitchers? Is sprinting speed going to help increase velocity? At @obdog8, Aubrey Guillotine. All right. The first thing I will say on this, it's not like an XY positive correlation in terms of like speed going to increase velocity. Like, oh, my 10-yard dash went from a 1.6 to a 1.5. Like, absolutely going to throw 92 now and I was throwing 89 before. Like, it's just automatically going to happen. That's not the case, right? Anyone who tells you that is lying to you, and they're full of shit, quite frankly. I will tell you, though, that there is a very, very strong positive effect to sprinting when it comes to helping pitchers become more powerful, which can then in turn, and moving better, quite frankly, which could then increase velocity. Why? I will say this overall for athletes who don't sprint predominantly in their sport. Like, let's go over this. Goalies in soccer, hockey, or things like that. Offensive linemen or linemen in football. Sprinters. Baseball pitchers, we just talked about, right? Athletes who generally do not sprint in their sport say, why would I sprint in my training, right? Like, what's that going to do for me? Golfers, another one, golfers. I think that's what I meant to say when I said baseball players. Golfers, right? So why would I sprint if my sport isn't based around sprinting? Like, what, Jerry, riddle me that. Like, what the hell is that going to do for me? I remember this golfer, Sean, that I had, shout out Sean, came in and I said, we're going to sprint a lot. And he kind of looked at me cross-eyed. Like, what's that going to do for me? And I'm like, listen, the power benefit, the unilateral power benefit in terms of sprinting when it comes to athletes that don't sprint, just because you don't sprint doesn't mean you can't get something out of it, right? Look at pitchers. I have Hunter, a remote athlete that I work with, who has seen a major velo increase. You know, in addition to him having a great throwing program that he runs for himself, we've also become more athletic and more powerful. And a lot of it is he'd never sprinted before. I was like, I don't need you to have the mechanics of an elite track star or an Olympic sprinter, but what I do want is to have you sprint, to have you make ground contact times that are very volatile and powerful, the most powerful energy interaction that you could possibly have in terms of strength and speed training is the sprint. Like, you make those ground contact times, the ground contact time is short. There's so much force and power being applied in such a small amount of time that what that's going to do for your overall unilateral power, even as an athlete that doesn't sprint, it's invaluable. Like, it's so great for you. I won't say it's like a direct correlation, but what I will say is if I can get my legs more powerful and more explosive, right? How could that not help me in terms of a rotational activity like golfing or pitching or swinging a bat? Even look at it this way. If we're working on acceleration work, right? I talked about this with Ray Ricker the other day. Ray is a minor league catching coach for the Phillies. Talked about, static force production for a catcher in blocking, right? Or for a goalie in hockey to move from left to right in the net. Acceleration work, having an athlete start in a position where they have no momentum and there's no movement whatsoever, and then they just have to drive off their leg as best as they can, produce as much force in as short of amount of time as possible. And as we know, acceleration is very force dependent. It's like, how good can I be? And even for linemen, right? Linemen's the same thing in football. Like, I have to explode off the line from a static position and produce force to block, right? How effective or how helpful can, and as a pitcher, the last one, the pitcher, right? A pitcher's not running to the mound to then throw, right? They're set on the rubber and they have to produce a lot of force. It's a ballistic movement. It's very quick, but a lot of force in that, in their legs to create power without momentum, right? How effective can I make my athletes at producing force with no momentum? So their first couple strides in acceleration work. And what I've seen is, my athletes, they sprint. The athletes that don't particularly sprint in their sports, but they sprint and their vertical goes up. They're getting faster, right? And what it's doing is, yeah, they're throwing harder and there's other things that go involved in it, but it is helping them throw harder just because of the overall power increase in their legs, right? My golfers, they sprint faster. Their vertical goes up. Their drives are going up, right? My goalies look at me. Hey, I'm moving so much better from side to side at net, or I'm a third baseman and my first move to get to a ball down the line is just so much better. I'm a middle infielder. My range has gotten so much better. Like, I'm not going to ever be a base stealer as a first baseman, but man, do I get to my glove side or my backhand side to get to balls way better and get that first push off my leg. Like, that to me is so important. And I think even if you are an athlete that doesn't sprint for your sport, you need to be sprinting to see the power benefits it can give you in terms of all facets of what you do, particularly as a rotational athlete where that blanket linear vertical power can be so much for you. Before you start worrying about all the rotating you're doing, is we need to overall build that power in your legs. And there is no one activity that does that better than sprinting, even if you don't sprint in your sport. So I hope that answers that question. That is what I would say is the true benefit. And if you're a pitcher and you want to throw harder and you come to me and tell me you've never sprinted before, I'm going to be salivating. I'm going to be looking at myself saying, man, like, the things we can do if they've never sprinted before and never gotten that benefit from that, and they throw pretty hard already, if we implement that into their program now, there's going to be a lot of potential just increase the overall power in your body, in your legs. And I think that's invaluable and really helpful. So that's my answer to that. I hope that helps, Aubrey. And I hope that I answered that, but that's what I would say. Like, even if you're not a sprinting athlete in your sport, you need to be sprinting. Hey, next question. That was kind of a shitty segue on my part. Hey, big fan of your content. My son is 13 and trying to improve his vertical for basketball. He hasn't hit his growth spurt, but would like to start training the proper movement / muscles. Any advice on where to start at BMAC 1974, Ben McCauley? Ben, great question. And this is pretty simple. Above all else, if you want to get better at jumping, make sure you're jumping. And obviously go back to my first question today on the different ground contacts, but your son's 13. Like, I wouldn't even be worried about that stuff yet. I would have him box jumping. I would have him vertical jumping, measure his times if you can, or his heights if you can in any way possible, whether it's a chalk on your hands, a jump mat, a vertex, whatever you have access to keep that competitiveness. Another easy way to do it is if you don't have something for them to reach for, put them near a basketball hoop. You could even get a video of like them standing underneath it and jumping, and how high their hand is above the rim or where their hand is in relation to the rim is a really good way to gauge improvement. But find a way to measure it so you can gauge improvement and jump twice a week, probably. Like, if you're going to be sprinting twice a week, once or twice a week, make sure you're jumping twice a week, especially if you want to improve your jump ability. Everyone always tries to get too fancy, and there's merit to getting the muscles around your kneecap stronger, your VMO, things like that. But above all else, like, if we want to get better at an activity, we should do that activity, especially when you're 13 years old. That bucket is so empty that just having your son jump consistently the right way for weeks on end will get a very big improvement for him. When it comes to mechanics, I would say just worrying about like getting his hands above his head to make sure he understands, like, throwing his arms down into his hip load to just maximize the speed he's putting into his load. If he's doing box jumps, get him a little closer to the box. That's going to ensure that he's exploding and exerting power vertically. If he starts further away, he might jump at the box, which isn't going to work as much as that vertical power that we're trying to build. So my advice on where to start, if he hasn't done strength training either, get his legs stronger. If he's never done it before and he is not that strong, getting him his maximal strength up is going to have huge carryover early on, like right away. There's going to be a lot of, like, if you jumped a 18 to 20 inch vertical and never squatted before and you start getting him to jump routinely and get his squat up 100 pounds in a year, that's going to be gigantic for his vertical jump improvement. So that'd be my advice on that. All right, last question for today. Morning, Coach. First off, been digging all the podcasts you've been doing. Thank you. Hyped to listen to the one you just did with Adam Manner that I had on 2 weeks ago. He was great, so check that out if you haven't yet. Secondly, listen to a recent Meathead Monday where you talked about how you weren't a fan of the crossover for baseball players, crossover step. I don't think I fully understood your explanation of how you preferred them to start. Also was curious and if you had the same opinion for football players in a 5-10-5. Simply, that's how I have always coached a shuttle for football athletes as I feel they waste less time and gain more ground by crossing over the top. But also the intent of the 5-10-5 start is not the same as base running. Good point. Just curious on your input if you felt the same. At Jacob Dubu, Jacob Williams. All right, Jacob, great question and thank you for listening. First thing I will say is yes, the 5-10-5, and if you're starting in that traditional two-point stance, and the baseball start are two completely different things. The other part I will mention too is in a 5-10-5 where you could actually set yourself up and get your weight shifted over your front side is not as reactionary as the field of play or even a regular baseball start. And what I mean by that is if you can get into a position where you could shift all your weight over your front side, you could probably make the argument that you could cross over or do a traditional step and not do a drop step because of that. I am very adamant about the fact that in a reactionary situation, like on a football field where like the athlete isn't predetermined where they're going and they just make the adjustment on the fly, or they have other things or other thoughts in their mind ahead of how their feet are working, they're worried about covering somebody or worried about where the play is going, you will notice that when you take the thought of where they're going to be stepping out of their mind and give them another goal, their body is going to naturally do that. I have a hard time fighting against the way an athlete does something naturally and how the brain and the body wants to do it because it's a very smart machine, right? Smarter than we think we know how to run it, right? If that makes sense. I will tell you that if you are doing an agility test where you could start them out in a certain position and have the weight shifted and have a predetermined start, that is a possibility that you could do it that way if you want to. And in terms of like how my explanation is of how I have them start, the drop step basically in baseball is getting a drive off your back leg. So if you're lined up as a base stealer, your left leg pushes your weight over to the right over your front side. And your foot basically picks up to clear some space so that you can rotate. And it drops and it picks up also for the fact that if it picks up and then gets put back down, it has an easier time of settling under or behind your hip. As we know, in acceleration, getting under or behind our hip is the most optimal way to produce force horizontally. It allows us to do that without wasting time. So if we don't pick that foot up, we have to shift and drift over our front side before we can actually move. It allows us to move our body over or in front of our foot so that it slots on behind us and drives us forward. It's the most efficient way to do that. So I will say that, like, you feel like they waste less time and gain more ground. No one's losing ground when they do a drop step. If anything, they're actually moving their center of mass and their body towards where they want to go so that their foot can drop behind it and further push it that way. That is why it's the most optimal way to go when it comes to reactionary or even baseball starts in general. That is why it's optimal because it allows us to shift our body over in front of our first drive leg and set it back underneath us. So that is why it's the most efficient way to do it. But as I said, an agility test where you may be able to have a predetermined start, depending on which way you're starting. You could make that argument when it's reactionary or when it's with a baseball start. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. It is the best way to go for those reasons that I mentioned. So, great question. All right, guys. I want to thank you for those awesome 5 questions. These were great today, and I was really able to sink my teeth into them. I thank you, as always, for joining me. As I said before, I hope this made your Monday following a summer weekend a little brighter. I know the Monday scaries are pretty tough, or the Sunday scaries for that matter, but I know Monday's got to be even scarier. Sunday's scary. I can imagine Monday's a lot scarier. So I hope you guys are enjoying these. As always, I will see you guys Wednesday. Be on the lookout for an awesome episode with Coach Carlton Salters from UTSA Softball. And until next time, I will talk to you guys then. Peace. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Muscles and Management Podcast brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jared DiFilippo, signing off on the show that's changing the way we view training, sports performance, and business.